The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Well, it's The Midwife of Hope River. It's a novel of an American midwife by Patricia Harmon. Patricia, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
All right, now, you know, this book, third book that you've written, the first novel, and you yourself, a midwife.
That's right. A few years ago, and this is really, my first book was called The Blue Cotton Gown. It's a memoir about the courage of ordinary women. But a few years ago, and I think this probably happened in Ohio as well as West Virginia, there was a medical malpractice insurance problem. And I work with my husband. He's an OBGYN. I'm a nurse midwife. Insurance for medical malpractice doubled. Just to give people an idea, it went from $70,000 to $140,000 a year for the two of us. We felt like we couldn't afford to deliver babies anymore. And this happened to a lot of providers all around, you know, the country, basically. Some states were worse than others, and West Virginia was one of the worst. So we lost a lot of providers in those years. The good news is, after 20 years of delivering babies, I had time to write books. So now I write about birth and about women's issues and about midwifery. And like you said, this is my first work of fiction.
All right, so you're birthing other things now besides women.
That's a very good way to put it. And writing a book is a little bit like being in labor, only it takes about 2 years.
Now, the insurance went up. Was that a governmental thing or something? Or
No. It was related to the companies, and especially small states like West Virginia. They felt like they were losing more than they were making. And you always wonder, we don't know, you know, we don't know the facts and figures of who's making money over there. But they just felt like West Virginia was a high-risk state and that there aren't that many doctors, so they needed to raise the rates to cover their costs. So in some states, they have a limit on what people can sue. So for pain and damage, they might limit it at $1 million. In West Virginia, we didn't then have those laws. So the sky was the limit, and you could sue your doctor or your midwife for, you know, $5 million, $10 million, you know. So that's why that happened.
All right, now you're a midwife in the late 20th century, early 21st century, but the book takes place at the turn of the century in the early 1900s. How has midwifery changed from that era to today?
Well, in those days, the midwife practiced at home. She didn't have a license, really. I mean, some states had licenses, but often you were just the granny in the hollow or the only person in that part of town who'd seen a baby born. And in fact, my character is in the beginning of the Great Depression. That's sort of how she became a midwife. She was educated. She could read. So she had some textbooks that she could study. And she had apprenticed, but her mentor passed away early in life, so she was left in the valley of the Hope River as the only midwife, and she's sort of learning as she goes along. She says in the first chapter, she says, "I'm 36, have already been a widow twice, am too old and too obstinate for courting, and besides that, I'm wanted in two states."
And
so right then, you have to read the book.
There you go. You have to.
You have to.
All right, now, how has midwifery changed? I mean, today, it seems like in the 60s, 70s, maybe there wasn't as much of it, but it's coming back. Am I correct?
For sure, that's right. 80% of babies in the world are born into the hands of midwives. In the United States, it's 10%. That's a lot less, but it's growing because just a few years ago, it was 2%. So I think in the last 10 years, it's really kind of exploding. And, you know, my husband's a doc. He's a OBGYN. So it's not to say anything bad about OBGYNs. We love them. We're glad to have them. But the difference is that the midwife spends the whole labor with you, and you get to know her, and she's right at the bedside. my husband's a wonderful doc, but he's not going to stay there and rub your back. He doesn't have time. So that's, I think, why it's catching on. I mean, the C-section rate in the United States is 33%. That's one out of three babies is born by major surgery. Midwives are very good at getting babies out the other way, and that's probably another reason people are turning to them.
You know, I've heard of names like Dr. Hertz, Dr. Other weird names that might go along with that, like Dr. Payne. You have a protagonist here, Patience.
Patience Murphy. And I named her Patience because I'm really not that patient. And I wanted her to be different than me. But she says in the book she's not that Patience, despite her name. And it turns out, actually, it's her alias. Because remember, she's wanted in two states. But a lot of people who've read my other memoirs will say, is Patience you? And I go, oh, not really. I think I'm Mrs. Kelly, the mentor that died. Mrs. Kelly died at 52. That was the average age of death in the 30s. And there was so much death then, you know, typhoid fever, malaria, industrial accidents, childbirth. It was interesting to write the book because I had to do a lot of research.
You know, I come across some things here like and this takes place in West Virginia, and how really rough and tumble the coal industry was and how filthy it was with houses of maybe just a room or two with, you use the term, a dirty urchin was in the, in there. It was coal dust and stuff and they were outside playing. West Virginia, the coal industry has pretty much changed over the years, I guess?
Yes, for sure. And I think the unions played a big part in that. The time period the book is written, the unions were sort of failing because of the Great Depression. And if we didn't need iron and steel, we didn't need the coal to make things. So the unions were kind of falling apart at that point. But of course, they built themselves up again later during World War II. And, a unionized mine would have nice cabins and a school and a clinic for their workers. I'm not saying they're always great, but the mining camps that she went into were what they called wildcat camps, where somebody just started digging a hole in the ground and hired people who were really treated like beasts of burden in many cases.
Was that surprising to find out with your research, or maybe you already had knowledge of that?
No, I think it was a little bit surprising. I mean, West Virginia is a pretty impoverished state in lots of ways, and there still are people that live like the third world there, and I suppose in places in every state, But no, I think it was a surprise, and even the children were used in the mines, and before that, women, because they were small and they could crawl into these little holes, and there were no safety rules then. And sometimes mining accidents still happen, as we know, but at least there's somebody, supposedly inspecting the mines. And in those days, you could do whatever.
In your book, The Midwife of Hope River, you talk about where Patience, this midwife, she can't do a whole lot sometimes without having a doctor there. But it's really pretty impossible for her not to do things, although she's wanted anyway, so she might as well do things. But the doctors were making laws because they were kind of afraid of midwives, weren't they?
Yeah, there was a certain point, I guess it's probably the start of the American Medical Association, where they were trying to drive chiropractors out, naturopathic doctors out, midwives out, anybody that was competition. In the state, the area that she was in, the doctor was not sympathetic, but he was not opposed to her anyway because he didn't want to serve the poor. And he didn't want to go out into these mining camps, so he was kind of glad to have her around. But it's interesting, in those days, all of rural America, 80% did not have electricity, and you never think about that, she was really living like it was pioneer days, but it was 1930. If you lived in the city, they would have electricity, trolley cars and everything. Even small towns had those, but not out in the country. And the roads to get to a hospital were, perilous, really. To take a woman out on some of those roads, it might take you an hour or two to find a doctor or a hospital. So sometimes she ends up doing a birth that is quite complicated and just sort of by the seat of her pants, basically.
When you're reading The Midwife of Hope River, Patience, she has little bit of a problem with a cow, and she does go to find this vet. She figures out they're just about the same age. Of course, you have to read the book to see if there is a love interest there or anything else. But how much different is birthing humans as birthing animals? Now, maybe you've had experience at that. Maybe you did a lot of research.
I did a lot of research. But it's amazing what you can find on YouTube. You can see pictures of goats being born, pictures of horses being born. And I did have a vet read my book to make sure I was accurate. So I think I got it right. There are some different births of animals in the book. It was fun to write, and I'll give you a hint. There is a little romantic interest going on there.
Ah, see, I wasn't going to give anything away. All right, now, The Midwife of Hope River, why in West Virginia? Why not in a big city or even a smaller town that maybe had more money than a small place in West Virginia?
Well, I live in West Virginia, so I thought that would be interesting. I live in Morgantown, West Virginia. And, you know, I lived rurally. This was back in the 70s. I lived on a commune, and we built our own cabins, and we didn't have electricity, and we didn't have running water by choice. We were back to the Landers. So I knew that lifestyle. And also, I thought it would be interesting to write about the 30s, just because our country is kind of going through that now. We call it the Great Recession, not the Great Depression. But there's a lot of similarity, people losing their houses, you know, losing their land. Farmers were losing their farms back in those days. A lot of unemployment. So I just thought it would be an interesting time period to write about. And West Virginia is because that's home to me now. I didn't grow up there, but that's home. Been home for a long time.
What was it like in the 70s, living on a commune, building your own houses? I mean, you had to probably wash your hands or wash your clothes. You had to wash your hands too, I'm sure, but washed your clothes by hand and no electricity or anything.
That's true. And you know what's interesting? It was my third baby that sort of made me think maybe we've done this long enough, because I was washing diapers by hand. And, you know, we had made these choices to live like this. And in a way, it was a beautiful life. I mean, I sometimes talk about how hard it was. But, I mean, let's face it, we worked together. We all played musical instruments. We sang together. We helped each other with childcare, so nobody was always stuck with the kids, you know. So, I mean, it was a great life in lots of ways. I never regretted it. But it was hard, and it was hard like it was in the 30s. I mean, people would, after a while, want modern conveniences. And we eventually, almost all of us went back to school. We had been dropouts, but we all went back to school. And most still live in West Virginia.
So you'd never go back to that life again, I guess.
Oh, I romanticize it in my head. Yes, I do. I think if I did it, it would be, I mean, now we could maybe use solar power or wind power. We wouldn't have to be without anything. So I definitely would have. And you know what? I'm spoiled about air conditioning. That would be hard for me.
There you go. Well, those trees do kick out a little bit with the shade, right? So like the Amish who are in one area and they help each other, living like you were in the 70s, were there others like you around, or were you like in your own area by yourselves?
No, there were a lot of people coming to West Virginia from all over at that time. Land was cheap and beautiful. So, and people were coming from New York, Texas, New Jersey. So, yeah, there were, and we had a whole food store that we started. So there were a lot of cultural opportunities, I think, for people not to be too isolated.
You were eating organic before it was even popular.
That was true. My kids were raised organic.
So what do you think now, because I'm sure that you had a cow, I'm sure that you got fresh milk that way, you probably didn't go to the store to buy your milk, but the FDA says, no, you can't buy raw milk because it'll just kill you. What do you think of that law? Is raw milk really much better?
I know a lot of people are drinking it. One of my sons is very much more sustainable and organic than I am, and he swears by it. It's a hard one. I mean, you know, there are a lot of diseases. There are viruses. There's tuberculosis. There's all kinds of things. I raised my kids on it, and also breast milk, of course. But if I was young, I would probably do it again. I might have been young and foolish. But now that I'm older, would I still do it? I don't know.
You know, one of my favorite parts in the book was patience. She's straining the milk, and everything's just so natural. I was a little concerned, though, about the cow. The cow had a little problem with one of its teats. It was kind of red and infected. I don't know if I'd be drinking the milk.
Well, she was quite ignorant about farming. She had inherited this farm from her mentor, Mrs. Kelly, and the cow along with it, and she really didn't know that much. She knew about women, and that's how she meets the vet. She goes and gets the vet. And, yeah, probably you would throw away the milk until the cow got better.
Yep. All right, well, let's talk about your other books. You have two other books, Before the Midwife of Hope River, this a novel. The other two books, not novels.
They're memoirs. And it's interesting how I started writing. I'd always written poetry and articles for nursing journals. I'm a nurse midwife. But I went through menopause. I couldn't sleep very well. Your women listeners will relate to that. And we had just stopped delivering babies, so I was just listening to the patients, and I would leave the room, and I would think, I can't believe what she just told me. My husband, I don't know if this is a typical guy thing, but his interest was, is she going to be okay? Is there anything we need to do? But he didn't really want to hear the whole story. And I thought, I think women would like to hear this. Now, some of my readers are men, so I don't mean to exclude them, but we women tend to be fascinated with the lives of other women and how they solve their problems. So I began writing at night, and I realized after a while that this could be a book. So that was my first book. And then my second book, Arms Wide Open, A Midwife's Journey, is really the story of how I became a midwife and how I lived on these communes and why I went back to school. I did home births at first, and I really was not well trained. I was much like patients, kind of flying by the seat of my pants. But I was very careful only to take the lowest risk patients. So I really didn't run into trouble, and I still believe in home birth, but why I became a nurse midwife was I wanted to be able to serve more than just the very low risk, all organic food, hippie woman who lived in a log cabin and drug her own logs out of the woods. I mean, those women were about as low risk as you can get. But, you know, I met a lot of people down there that had unfortunate birth experiences that you would never want to stay home with them. And I felt like they need someone nice to take care of them who's respectful and gentle. And that's why I went back to school.
Patricia, a lot of times a memoir for somebody that's unknown, which is where you come from, is really hard to sell. What made your book so popular?
Well, The Blue Cotton Gown, the one that's about the women's issues and the story about the women's courage, I think appealed to people because of that, because of the women's issues. And I hope it's well written and lyrical as well as just good storytelling. I wrote it as if it was a novel. And I think that's the other thing. It's not just a memoir about someone telling their story that you never heard of, you know. I was very stubborn about getting published. I knew that I would get the book out one way or another, but it took a lot of what's called query letters, and I was just kept going. I would have published, you know, self-published if I had to, but once I began to write about the women, I had a mission, and that kept me going.
Self-publishing, you probably make a little more money that way off the book, but it's a lot more work. Would that be correct?
Well, you have to invest money first just to get it out there, and that's a couple thousand dollars. The difficulty with self-publishing is it's hard to get it in a bookstore. You can sell it on, you know, online, but the bookstores usually want, you know, have a regular publisher, unless maybe they have a local author section you can get it in. So I have friends who've done the self-publishing, and I don't know if they make more money or not. I felt I had more than one book in me, and I wanted to get a publisher if I could, so that each time I wouldn't have to start investing money.
A memoir, a little different than a novel, because you're looking at experiences that you've had or probably other people have. I mean, they're already there. With a novel, The Midwife of Hope River, I mean, it's all up in the head, I guess, with the exception of the things that you know and the research that you do. What are the challenges with writing the first book as opposed with the second book?
Well, when you're a healthcare provider, you have to be so careful with privacy issues. And I think any kind of memoir, you're thinking as you write, is this going to hurt someone in some way? And of course, I deeply disguised all the patients. And in fact, I let them read their own sections of the book and told them what the book was about so they could see the context. And not one said no. But you still have to think about your colleagues, you know, people in your office. If you mention someone, even if they're disguised, you have to be careful. And the nice thing about writing a novel, like you said, you're making it up. So you can just go wild. And it's really a lot of fun. I enjoyed writing the novel. I'm glad I wrote the nonfiction first because, like I said, I was really on a mission. And since I'm, until recently, I'm kind of an unknown, I think it helped that I was on a mission for the first two books. And I still am on a mission. I want to tell people about natural birth and the ideals that I have about caring for other people.
So what made you start writing, or have you always written?
I've always kept journals, and in fact, the book Arms Wide Open, A Midwife's Journey, is from my journals that I kept during the 70s and 80s. I had a box of them up in the attic, and I had a dream about the home birth days and about the terrible thing that had happened to another midwife, and I woke up, and here I am, this doctor's wife, living in this nice house with this pillow-padded, floral-sheeted bed, and I think, who am I? Who is that other chick? That hippie chick that was going out doing home births. So I went and got the journals, and that's how that book began.
So what did your husband think? Had he read it, I'm sure?
He's very supportive. And in fact, in The Blue Cotton Gown, and The Arms Wide Open, for a physician, he allowed me to write the truth about what that's like. Many doctors kind of keep their white coat on. They don't really want you to know about that they maybe are afraid about being sued, that maybe they have money problems in the practice. That's all when they enter the room, they're a kind of an anonymous figure. And Tom, is my husband's name, really allowed me to show what it felt like. And I asked him over and over again, are you sure this is okay that I write this? So he's very supportive.
Right in the first couple books, the colleagues in the office, were they trying to figure out where they were in this or if they were even in it?
Yes. In fact, our receptionist will brag that she is so-and-so in the book. She will tell patients that, oh, when you read the book, that's me, Linda. Her name really isn't Linda, but she wants people to know. Yeah, I think they're very supportive, too.
That's kind of funny. Midwife of Hope River, of course, the first book in a long line coming out here, I'll bet.
You know, the reviews are from people online, especially the reader, are so positive, and people are saying, we didn't want the book to end. We want to hear more about these people. And I felt the same way when I finished the book and I got it published. I thought, oh, I kind of like these people. So I do have a sequel in the works, and I think I'll write a trilogy about these people, each one emphasizing a different character.
Well, of course, some of the characters that are in this book will come out in future books.
Patience is back, yes, along with the vet.
Do you ever think about killing her off and maybe your publisher said, no, maybe you shouldn't do that?
No, we haven't talked. We haven't. They know I'm writing a new book, but I never said that I wouldn't have her in there.
Okay, because, it depends on how sad you want the book and everything mm-hmm. else. So I hope I didn't give the away. I hope we didn't give away the ending was saying that patients would be back.
No. And, you know, it's interesting because The Midwife of Hope River was not the name that I thought the book was going to be. My title was Sound of the Heart because she's always listening to patients' hearts, the baby's heartbeat, and then heart has sort of a metaphorical meaning. But the publisher wanted something with the word midwife in it, probably because it is kind of trendy now. They thought they could sell more books. But I really like The Midwife of Hope River because I realize that's a common theme with all my books. It's about hope. And I feel like, especially in dark times, I feel like there's so much to worry about, the economy, the wars in the Middle East, you know, the environment. There's just so much to worry about. We really need hope. And I think that's what I write about.
You know, I've heard of a stethoscope that a doctor might use to find a heartbeat. Patients didn't have one of those, did she?
No, she had a little wooden-horned fetoscope. And I actually own one, and I've decided that these book things that I go around to, I really should bring it. But it's carved out of wood with an earpiece, and it's about 6 or 8 inches long. And the midwife puts her ear on one side and then leans down and presses it on the mother's stomach. And I've used them before, and it's like hearing a watch under a pillow. It's really, it takes a lot of skill, but that's all they had. No monitors or any even regular stethoscope like doctors use now.
I think I use those to hear people sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of that's kind probably of where they came from. It's like a horn. Yeah, it was made out of wood.
All right, so the Midwife of Hope River coming back, perhaps a trilogy. Did you see this happening when you were writing it?
No, I didn't. I wanted to write another book about midwifery, and I thought it would be interesting to set it in the 30s. But no, and the character really just kind of came to me. People ask, how do you write? Do you make it up? Do you have an outline? No, to me, it's more like seeing a movie. I know who Patience is, but I don't know that much about her background, and it becomes clear to me that, oh, yes, well, she was an orphan. That's why she had to live in Pittsburgh with Mrs. Kelly. And so the book just kind of grows, and it's really fun. It's really fun.
You just keep embellishing everything that mm-hmm. you've had there. And
then so much research. You have to know everything from what a loaf of bread costs in 1930, 10 cents, to what a gallon of gas cost, 10 cents. How many miles a gallon did the cars get? Did they still have cranks in 1930? All these things you have to look up, so it's really fun.
So they had like a 10-cent store instead of a dollar store, I guess.
That's right.
Of course, The Midwife of Hope River, it's the brand new book by Patricia Harmon. How about a website? Do you have a website we could go to?
We do, and you can actually read an excerpt of the book on there, and it's easy to remember, patriciaharmon.com. So you just, and it's Harmon, H-A-R-M-A-N, just if people want to look.
How long did it take you to write this?
2 years. Each one of my books took 2 years.
Are they getting faster with, I mean, you already know how much gas costs now, and we're going to stay in the 30s, right?
Yeah, that's true. It might be a little faster that way.
All right, now, if we go to the website, we're going to find out where you might be at a bookstore near us.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find out about maybe the next ideas that you have for the next book?
A little bit. I mean, I
are you superstitious?
Really, no.
Nope.
No, I mean, maybe I am, but not about books. It just, I've just started the second book, so I can't really say that much about it yet because it's still in my head.
All right. Well, the book is The Midwife of Hope River, a novel of American midwife. Of course, Patience. She's a protagonist in this book. You know, what a fun story this is. And, you know, as you're reading this, if you're going to be like I am, you're going to come to a part and you're going to say, you know what? A birth is almost a birth, whether it's a human birth or an animal birth, and how everything is just so intertwined, I guess.
Yeah, we think of ourselves as so special, we human beings, but we're animals. You know, we have a bigger brain, you know, maybe a soul, but the birth process isn't that different.
All right. Well, if I just found out I've got a bigger brain, I didn't know that. I'm kind of surprised now. Patricia, thanks a lot.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Patricia Harmon, author of her brand new book, The Midwife of Hope River. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.